Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
No parity yet? No Demko time parody set to Hammer time? No, we don't have that?
No. I think it's just straightforward here.
Canuck Clay, get on it. Get on it, Canuck Clay. We need a little Demko time because that is the guy for the foreseeable future. Scott Rintoul, Mick Nizar. This is Canuck Central. You want in on the conversation? Get in. Subway text line is 650-650. We didn't have this information 24 hours ago. It was still filtering in, and we didn't know, other than a very cryptic tweet sent out by our friend and a regular on this station, Patrick Johnson, maybe something more to Markstrom missing practice. And then we all know what it's turned into. We don't know how long Jacob Markstrom is going to be out. We don't actually know the extent of his injury. Canucks are going to determine that in the next 24 to 48 hours. What we do know is he's not playing on this road trip. We don't expect him to play for the foreseeable future, and it is now, as they say, Demko time.
And yeah, a reevaluation coming tomorrow, but as we've heard basically since the story broke, we're bracing for a month. That was the term Elliot Friedman used yesterday. The Canucks are bracing for a month. And when you look at it like that, okay, it feels daunting, but I also want to frame it this way, because a lot of pressure is being put on Thatcher Demko. And this is an opportunity for him. But it feels like...
Both of those things are true.
Yes. No, absolutely. But when you insert, like, manageable expectations, if I were to say Markstrom's out a month, it feels overwhelming. But if I said the Canucks need 10 wins, that doesn't feel so daunting, does it?
Probably depends how many games they play.
Yeah, but we know there's 21 left. But realistically, they need 10 wins. That seems manageable. And it's not as if Demko has to steal 10 wins. That's not what it is. It's the team has to win 10 games. And that feels manageable.
Well, I made this point an hour ago. We have seen players with lesser reputations, goaltenders with lesser reputations, get hot down the stretch and carry teams into playoffs. Jordan Binnington just did it last year. And yes, Jordan Binnington had less of a rep than Thatcher Demko, who has started 27 more games at the NHL level than Jordan Binnington had prior to making his ascension with the Blues last year. Andrew Hammond did this multiple seasons ago, and he doesn't have the pedigree, with all due respect to a local product, and it was a great story, he doesn't have the pedigree of a Thatcher Demko. So this type of thing can happen. But those teams, Bick, had no margin for error. This team has some margin for error. They don't need to be near perfect as the Blues had to be last year, or as the Senators had to be in 2014-15. What they need to have is goaltending that gives them a chance to win. And Thatcher Demko, for the most part, has provided that for them.
Yeah, he's met an NHL standard. That's why I don't understand the, oh, it's over, Markstrom's good. Look, he's been awesome, Jacob Markstrom. I get it. But this isn't such a drop-off where the season is over. He's provided you a certain level of stable goaltending, and he's also had to jump in when Jacob Markstrom was away from the team, right? He's done literally this before.
And he's done it for a week.
Yeah. But
not multiple weeks.
He has stepped in, right? And he's had a run of games where he can do this.
Yeah. Nothing like he's going to be asked to do now. And that's fair. That's part of this discussion. He started three games in a row once in his NHL career. And those three games went exceedingly well. He had a .943 save percentage. He was 2-1 and probably should have won the other game. He was great. We just don't know. And I said this earlier, and I'm sure you'd agree with this. One of three things is going to happen. He's either going to thrive, he's going to be average, or he's going to struggle. And you just have no idea which it's going to be right now. There is information to lead you down one of the first two paths before the third right now. We don't know. We don't know how he's going to handle this workload and this pressure at the most important time of the year. We haven't seen any Canucks goaltenders have to deal with this type of stretch drive in 5 years.
Well, then let me put it to you, okay, of those three things, what do you believe is what he does.
The most predictable thing is, hey, he'll be average.
Yeah.
That's the most predictable thing. But I don't know, and I made this point earlier, and anyone who tells you they know how Thatcher Demko is going to perform over the next 3 to 4 weeks, if that's what it happens to be, they're lying to you. They don't know. They're hopeful, or they're drawing conclusions based on a little bit prior play, but this is something he's never been asked to do at the NHL level.
And you can only be so prepared for something to happen,
yes.
Right? And I always share a story of a moment like that. Like I remember getting onto an airplane, and I was in the emergency seat. I was the only person. It was a small propeller plane, and I was the only person that had to deal with the issues of an emergency should happen. And look, you can go through a rundown of like, hey, this is what happens, blah, blah, blah. You can only be so prepared for that emergency, right? Thatcher Demko has gone through a lot of situations that, yeah, he's had to, you know, come in into a game, and here's your start, and he's come through Utica. Eventually, you have to break the glass, and you become who you could be. And this is his first real test with some adversity. And that's encouraging, and that's a positive sign for what could be his long-term future. And then there's the component of, hey, if he succeeds in this, what does that mean for the big picture moving forward?
Yeah, and that is a much bigger discussion, mm-hmm. one I want to get to here in just 1 second. But as you pointed out earlier, they don't need Demko to go 10-0-1. Over the next 11 games. If he does that, great, because they're already in the playoffs by that point. If he goes on that kind of run, the Canucks are in, and now they don't have to worry. But you're right. You can only use information that you've seen to lead you to logical conclusions, but they don't always end up in logical outcomes. Ryan Miller going to St. Louis is a great example of that.
Yeah.
Ryan Miller was going to be the answer. And Ryan Miller's a great goaltender, excellent career, but he just didn't fit. And it just wasn't the right piece for that puzzle. Ryan Miller went 10-8-1. He lost 4 of his 6 playoff games. And people were mad at the Blues. But what did the Blues do at the time? They went, look, man, the one piece we're missing is a goaltender, and there's one guy out there with a resume. Let's go get him. So they did it. And then we've seen guys like Cam Ward come in game 3 of a playoff series in his rookie season and go win a cup. So this position in this sport specifically is arguably the most difficult thing to predict in sports.
Oh, for sure. And I do like the idea of, and I think the comment itself can be taken in different directions, but, and we can play it back for you here in a minute, but Jim Banning talking about they wanted to give Thatcher Demko this opportunity, and more importantly, they didn't want him looking over his shoulder, right? And so you harbor this culture of, hey, if something happens, next man up kind of mentality. And because we had a contingency plan, should Jacob Markstrom ever go down, we're going to follow that contingency plan. Even though, hey, we're at the end of the race, how much do we really believe in a guy who's played 27 some odd games coming to the season? It's like, how much do you want to buy into Thatcher Demko? Well, here's your chance, right?
And here's what Jim Benning had to say so that everybody can hear it for themselves.
We feel confident in Thatcher, and we want to give him this opportunity. You know, maybe, you know, we talked about if, you know, we were to go and get somebody more established, that, you know, we didn't want Thatcher looking over his shoulder. Like, this is his time now to run with it and, you know, see what he can do.
And if Thatcher Demko isn't incredible over these next number of starts, that doesn't mean he's not going to be a great goalie. And if he is, it also doesn't mean he's going to be a great goalie. Andrew Hammond is a great example of that. Cam Ward didn't have a stellar career, a very good career, a career you would take, but he was never quite that guy again, not for a long stretch of time. But this is going to give them more information, and that's where this discussion gets even more fun, at least from my perspective, because now we're talking chess.
Well,
we're talking chess now because Jacob Markstrom's contract negotiation is sitting in the background, and the future of the position in this franchise is sitting in the background.
Okay, I'm not that far down the rabbit hole. Right, I don't think this is a conversation about do you choose Markstrom or Demko. I think that choice is pretty clear. No matter what Demko does in this run here, that choice to me is clear. I'm choosing Jacob Markstrom every single time.
Yes, but it affects your negotiation.
How much? Like a couple hundred thousand?
It could be a lot more.
I'm at a point where Jacob Markstrom's met a baseline of what his cost is that if you really want to play hardball, it's minimal to me at this stage.
Let's put it this way. They're going to get information over the next number of weeks that they could only have speculated on before. What does a world without Jacob Markstrom look like? Now, the team in front of whichever guy we're talking about is going to be different next year. We can agree on that, but there's a number of parts that are going to be the same. And what they would have always gone into this offseason wondering, and going into this negotiation wondering, is, okay, what does a world without Jacob Markstrom look like? They're going to get more of a sample size on that. So that, of course, affects the way you go about your business.
But that's only if there's a ridiculous ask from the Jacob Markstrom camp. Like, if he comes in with 8x8 and you're like, okay, there's no way we're just going near that, then sure. If we follow some of the reports that happened this week where the Canucks were offering significantly lower than, you know, somewhere related to the Koskinen type of deal, then okay, the middle ground feels like five, somewhere around that $6 million mark for a couple of years, and I would assume some Seattle expansion protection, all of that. And I'm comfortable with that. And if you're in that ballpark, then I'm not sure I care what Thatcher Demko does in these next few weeks relative to what it means for Jacob Markstrom. To me, I understand the constant search for potential of what could be next. And there's, you can never be wrong and be like, hey, one day Thatcher Demko's going to play. One day he's going to play, and we think he's a superstar. You can never be wrong with that. You can also never be right with that because we're talking about a potential. He's not actually playing. Now this is that opportunity, but we've confirmed what Jacob Markstrom is. We've confirmed he's a top six goalie. Fair?
For this season. You're confirmed that Jacob Markstrom is a top six goalie in this league going forward. You've confirmed that.
I'm comfortable saying that.
He might be. This position, Bick, changes so quickly from year to year.
Right, but we're not talking about like a 9-year deal here. We're talking about like a four-ish year deal.
So you could say in 2020, in the spring of 2020, you know what? For the next 4 years, I'm confident Jacob Markstrom will be a top six goalie in the NHL for the next four years.
I'm confident giving him that contract, that he's earned that contract. And it's not an excessive contract. It's not as if it's the Carey Price, Bobrovsky, Lundqvist deal. It's a fairly reasonable contract, and it gives you opportunity to still build out the rest of your roster. It's not a crippling type of deal. If it's somewhere in that 4 year, five and a bit, towards $6 million contract,
that's a fair market trade. Is that what top six goalies for 4 years get?
If Robin Lehner's not getting the contract and he's getting traded and that's where the goalie market leads it to, like, I feel like that's where the contract is going. If I'm wrong on the market value, then I'm wrong on the market value. But if that's what it is, that's fine. Like, you can build around that. If you're talking about Thatcher Demko's going to upstage that, I would be stunned that you can switch that opinion in 20 games.
That's not what I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting is it gives you more information on what a world without Markstrom looks like. So it allows you to go down that path further, and it allows you to imagine what those possibilities are, because we can agree on this. Jacob Markstrom being here contractually and not being here contractually completely alters the landscape of how they assemble the rest of their roster financially. We can agree on that.
Yeah.
So it allows you to go further down that road. I'm not telling you that they're going to see Thatcher Demko play and say, we're not offering this guy a contract. Not at all. I think the most likely outcome has always been and will continue to be both of those guys being here. But this can allow you to take a little more of a hardline stance. It can allow you to think about how many games you want a guy like Thatcher Demko playing in next year, the year after that, and how much money you're willing to commit to the other part of that equation.
Is what Thatcher Demko could do here a bigger picture for what you could receive for him in the summer?
That's a part of it as well.
Right.
I think that's also a part of it, but some of it has to do with the goaltending situation himself. One of the things that I have been steadfast on is that if you sign Markstrom to what is somewhat of a reasonable contract, and if you're not doing that, I'm not sure what you're doing, but if you sign him to a reasonable contract and Demko's still here and the expansion draft's coming up, if they're both good, someone else is going to want one of them too.
Yeah.
You can always trade to another team. There's no situation that exists out there where there isn't going to be a team a year from now that doesn't want to add to its goaltending situation.
What's the phrase you used? Instead of being worried about Seattle, if Seattle is interested in them, there's probably 29 other teams that are interested.
Well, at least some of them.
Yeah.
There's multiple vendors here. You don't have to go down the Vegas Golden Knights. Hey, if you're negotiating with us, you can't talk to anyone else. Mm-hmm. Okay, what do you want? Like, there's so many teams that did that. And good on Vegas, because they were able to bluff all of these teams. They were able to say, you start talking to someone else, the deal's off the table. And these GMs were so worried that they were going to take this one player in particular that they coveted. They went, okay, what do you need? And others went, go pound sand. We'll take a guy off our roster. And more GMs are going to do that this time around. But this is one of those positions that there are always going to be teams that say, hey, we'd trade for that guy. And maybe the price isn't terribly high. But it's better than just losing him in an expansion draft.
Mm-hmm. Want to touch on a couple of texts here that are texting about Thatcher Demko. This one's from Colin from Langley. Demko will be fine. My biggest concern is injury risk. Will players be laying down in front of shots more than normal? I hope not, and they trust the guy between the pipes, but I cringe every time I see a player block a shot when the cup isn't on the line. Stats say there's a 90% chance the goalie will stop it. I don't want Tanev missing 4 to 6 weeks with a broken foot. This is Colin from Langley. One of the things that was really encouraging these last two games is how well the Canucks were trying to clear bodies out in front instead of just laying down shots. Yes, they did block shots, but they did a really great job these last two games of creating moments that Markstrom has clear vision to the puck. And we know all the stats and of how good he's been. That's what you want from team defense. To me, that's what team defense is making the life easier for your goaltender.
Yes.
More so than blocking shots, it's if you provide him with an easy vision towards the puck, the expectation is you save it. And I get what Colin's trying to say, but if there's an emphasis on that more so than, hey, you really got to block shots, then I'm encouraged. Much like Carolina, their approach to, you know, helping David Ayers was, we're just going to play better team defense, and it's easier on a goaltending. If you can commit to that style, then I'm more interested.
Ken and Burnaby says, sorry, Scott, don't believe it affects his negotiation one iota. Not in the least. Andrew from Poco goes a completely different direction and says, is it just me or could this stretch determine the future of all four goalies in the Canucks system?
Woo!
Do you re-sign Markey? Do you trade Demko? Is Domingue a long-term backup piece? Or do the Canucks have faith DiPietro will be ready in a year or two? Buckle down, everybody. The never-ending goalie narrative in Vancouver is just beginning yet again.
Sound the horn! Goalie graveyard!
Well, the funny thing is, and I was about to bring this up earlier, just when you think a management team has made its decision on what it's going to do, new information comes in and suddenly their view can change. Toronto is going through this right now to a certain degree. And Kyle Dubas is going to have to do different surgery than he thought he was going to have to do mm-hmm. with what he's assembled in Toronto. We have witnessed a goaltending situation here in Vancouver where management and coaching staff decided this is the direction we're going forward. And then do an about face and completely switch what it's doing. And that was this Corey Schneider, Roberto Luongo, who's our guy going forward. And then the next thing you know, it's actually Schneider being traded out. Yes, there were contractual implications and all of those different things, but let's not act like that hasn't happened in this market before. A different management team, I understand that. But there is a precedent for something like that happening.
Unless someone gets, like, takes the negotiation personally, I just don't see a scenario where Jacob Markstrom isn't here. That's just my read on it, right?
You know, I've been there the whole time.
Yeah.
I've been there the whole time. But if he has representation that is steadfast on the idea of something you just said, this is a top six guy the next 4 years. He's worth more than that. Here's what the top guys in that echelon get paid.
Mm-hmm.
If that is a harder line stance, then yeah, there's a situation where he goes to market.
I see, now that point of it is interesting too, because it's not as if when Alex Edler hit the market, he was peak defenseman, right? And there was a understanding, okay, here's where you are. You really want to be here. How badly do you want to be here? And it was an uncomfortable negotiation, I bet, for both parties. And ultimately, they each had to give something the other side wanted. In this negotiation, though, like there's a realization that Jacob Markstrom could be one of the most intriguing options on the goalie UFA market. If the rest of the league views him in relation to Braden Holtby, all those guys that are available.
The other part that's not congruent is the number of jobs available.
Yes.
You're a guy like Edler, you play a position where there's a lot of jobs available.
Yeah.
Jacob Markstrom, there's only so many spots you can land. Now, some of them are enticing. What's Chicago doing?
Do you want to go to Buffalo?
Sure. There's lots of situations we could throw forth and say, man, that team would love to have Jacob Markstrom. Sign me up. Let's go. And yet at the same time, depending on what the ask is and depending on whether they figure something out contractually with another goaltender or there's another free agent or a trade they have coming down, all of a sudden, and Aldi's pointed this out before, and he's not trying to scare the Markstrom camp. He's just presenting the reality. He said, when you play that position and there's just not many jobs available, the last thing you want is to overplay your leverage on the market and wind up being the guy who's looking around for a chair when the music stops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a tough reality too, right? Again, it just goes back to what we've been saying. I do feel like this does get worked out. It's just going to get uncomfortable. But this is about Thatcher Demko in the short now.
Mm-hmm.
What are our reasonable expectations? Because this road trip coming up, right, obviously starts tonight with Montreal. I feel like there's a couple of early winnable games. And does that build the confidence for him moving forward? Because you should be able to beat Montreal. You should be able to beat Ottawa, who barely put out a roster yesterday. If that is the foundation of what he can build upon, then it starts exploring all the things we're talking about of what kind of, does it shift the conversation of what we think Thatcher Demko is?
Well, does the team that showed up Saturday night at Rogers Arena show up at the Bell Center? Because if that team shows up, you got a lot of margin for error. Canucks were good in a lot of regards on Saturday night.
It feels like this is also more about the team than it is just Thatcher Demko.
Yes, absolutely it is. No question. And this isn't, hey, they have to completely change everything mm-hmm. they do. Nope. It goes back to what we've talked about for the last little while. They got to find a way to cut down on scoring chances against. And the last two games, even though they're only 1-0-1, they've done that. And Travis Green pointed that out. We'll hear from Travis Green just after the bottom of the hour. You'll get the coach's comments from Montreal. But he pointed that out, that against Minnesota, against Boston, their scoring chances against were down significantly. Didn't need the guy to be the guy the way that Markstrom has had to be many times this season.
Really quickly, I want to touch on something because you're talking about margin from error, and I said something to the effect of you basically need 10 wins. Bobby from the Dock saying, I don't know about the 10 wins. We might need more. Here's the reality. They kind of do have a margin of error because of A, being ahead, and also having games in hand. So when I say 10 wins, that gets you to 92 points. Calgary has got 19 games left. Arizona has 17 games left. Are you telling me that they're going to go 12-5? Like a team that's barely staying above 500, you're telling me that they're going to go 12-5 in this final stretch here. And yes, Arizona gets Darcy Kemper back, I know, but A, the Canucks have games in hand, and they're also ahead in points. So a two-point lead is really more like 5 points.
Depending on what happens in three specific games, that team that you bring up is very interesting. And the head-to-head matchups of this Pac-5 race are going to be compelling down the stretch. Arizona and Vancouver can largely determine the other's fate.
Mm-hmm.
They play three times. That's a split. Okay, depends what you do in your other game. Somebody goes wash on the other in those. Hey, guess what? We're taking all three,
mm-hmm.
as Arizona did to Vancouver last year. Arizona's the team that effectively ended Vancouver's meaningful games in March campaign a year ago. Like, that was the team. Vancouver has that opportunity to do that to Arizona, or vice versa. The team that actually controls the entire division is Vegas.
Yes.
9 of 18 games that remain on the schedule are head-to-head with the other four teams that are in the race with the Golden Knights. They play Edmonton three times, Vancouver twice, Calgary twice, Arizona twice. Vegas literally has the division in its control.
And, yeah, I'm curious if, because so much has been made of, this is the worst division in hockey, et cetera, that conversation. So they haven't had to play that division as much. And so is their record reflected of that they've been playing the other three juggernaut divisions? And now here they are in the stretch. Are they going to turn it up and start pulling away from the rest of the division? I do think that's a reality just because they got some defenders, obviously Robin Lehner helps. Are they poised to now streak?
Well, they're already streaking. What are they, won 6 straight?
Yeah.
Hosting Edmonton tomorrow night. Vegas is the only team in the Pac-5 race that is not on the ice tonight. Oilers, they'll get their three new bodies. They'll take on the Ducks. We know about Vancouver, Montreal. Calgary and Boston, a place that virtually no one wins in regulation outside of the home team. Just 2 regulation losses on home ice for the Bruins this year. Arizona hosting one of the weirdest teams at yesterday's deadline, the Florida Panthers. I don't know what I'm going to get game to game from the Panthers,
yeah.
And I certainly had no idea what I was going to get yesterday and was left somewhat dumbfounded.
I'm not sure what to get day to day from the management group. Really, like, or month to month, one in the summer, they're handing out big contracts. They legit wanted Bobrovsky and Panarin, and then Chris Johnson saying suggesting yesterday that maybe they want to decline a bit in their payroll.
Decline a bit? He suggested $10 million.
Yeah,
like that the ownership may have given them a mandate to cut about $10 million off the payroll. That number is quite interesting.
Yes.
How much do they sign Bobrovsky to? Oh,
direct comparable.
Now I don't think they're just asking to axe him, but. Yeah. That would solve it. That would absolutely solve it. Scott Rintoul, it's Bick Nizar. This is Canucks Central. You'll hear from the head coach, Travis Green, on this game day. Next in your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Well, my dad always calls me, say I'm like a cat because I got so many lives. But I find ways, and I think I'll do that again here. And right away, looking around the room, and I know a lot of guys, and I think I'll fit right in. And I know some of the coaches too, so it's. I think it's going to be a great opportunity for me.
Louis Domingue won't start tonight, but he will have a smile on his face. He is happy to be a part of the Vancouver Canucks. He's got equipment to match thanks to his dad hanging on to some of his gear from the Tampa Bay Lightning. The blue and white goes with what the Canucks will do tonight. That's great. Good for him. Thanks, Pops.
Looking sharp right away.
Helps me get traded to a franchise that is going to play in virtually your hometown, which is Montreal. And he's happy to go back home and had his first ever start there, by the way, with the Arizona Coyotes. Got his first ever win, February 1st, 2015, back in the day.
Around this time.
Yeah, pretty excited to be part of this operation. Travis Green, I imagine, would say he's happy to have him. He would rather have not been in a situation where his club had to go out and acquire a goaltender, but it is what it is, to quote a famous Todd Bertuzzi, who appears on this station, as he did this morning, every single Tuesday. Travis Green in Montreal today talking about the aforementioned injury, to Jacob Markstrom.
Yeah, it's you lose your starting goalie for a bit. We'll know more tomorrow, I hope. And, but when we've lost him tonight, we'll deal with it as we go, like we always have all year.
What do you hope a guy like Louis, with the experience he has, brings?
Well, just what you said, Batch. He's got experience. He's been in the league a while, played, I can't remember the exact number, 130-plus games, 140 games, and he's at that age where he can handle different situations. He's played in different types of games, so it was a good addition.
He's kind of been up and down, too. I mean, he's been waived, he's been traded, but he's also part of that 11-game win streak with Tampa, so he's kind of run the gamut, right? So you're getting a guy with some pedigree.
Yeah, I think it was important, especially at this time of year, to get a guy that's played in different types of games and feels comfortable in the league.
Comfortable with Demko too, considering what he gave you guys when Mark had to go back to Sweden?
Yeah, 100%. Sometimes I feel like I repeat myself a lot, but over the course of Demmer's progression to the NHL, we've stated several times the belief in him, the confidence in him, even this season. It's almost a one-third, two-third split that we've had with these guys, but we've had nothing but confidence in both our goalies, and I still do today. I'm excited for Demmer's opportunity.
Does it change anything in the way that you guys have to play in front of him?
No. Play good. You look at the last two games that we've played. I think we gave up 11 chances against Minnesota, 13 against Boston. I think our game is built not just around defense or offense, it's just about playing good and playing your best. And when we do that, which a lot of teams will say, when they play their best hockey, they're creating more scoring chances than they're giving. And that's not just in your D-zone coverage. That starts a lot of times in the offensive zone of simply winning a puck battle and playing on your toes. And when we do that, we're a good team.
Injuries happen, you have your share, but does it do anything for this group? You guys have done a lot of good to get to this point above the playoff bar, collective resolve just to make sure that this injury doesn't derail what you've done to this point?
Yeah, I'm not worried about that at all. Our guys, it's different. In the media and the public eye, when you're sitting on the outside, there's lots of time to talk, lots of time to analyze it. The guys in the room, they just play. They come to the rink, they play, they don't as much as they love Markey and love how he's played and know how valuable he is to the group, they still just worry about playing their best hockey and putting their best foot forward. And they've also got a lot of faith in Demmer as well, much like, you know, I have a lot of faith in him, and the players have just as much or more, and that's the beautiful thing about a team sport.
How can you take the home record, Travis, and be better on the road? You're below 500. I know not having last changed works into that equation, but how can you be more effective on the road?
Win more games.
Is there anything? You talked yesterday about some of the
stuff in
your own
zone. I know, we did talk about it yesterday, so we can talk about it again if you want. But
some of your defensive posture you talked about yesterday.
I don't think it has anything to do about defensive posture on the road compared to home. I think it's just playing your best hockey. You know, when you're a veteran team that's been through a lot of different games, I've said this many times, when playing on the road or playing at home isn't a big difference.
Right.
The only difference is the matchup that you don't get. You can try a little bit more on the road to get the matchup, and we do. But it's just a progression of a young group.
Sutter's status for today after missing practice yesterday?
Yeah, should be good to go.
You mentioned a young group. You have Quinn Hughes, who was in the first season in the NHL. And what are the elements that impress you the most so far, knowing his progression? We have some young players here in Montreal also that are trying to evolve.
Oh, I mean, what impresses me is his overall skill. You know, I could probably go on for a while about little things in his game. He's incredible skater, great on his edges, great vision. I like that he stays humble. I also like that he can handle highs and lows if he makes a mistake. He doesn't crumble. He, if he scores or gets 3 or 4 points, he doesn't get ahead of himself either, and that's a big part of being a good young player in the league.
Do we sometimes lose sight of the fact of Pedersen's progression, Travis? It was a year ago when he got tangled up and just buried. He was out for a bit, but he's had to fight through some things, and here he is today as an elite young player in the league, and just buries in the American League. And we don't sometimes lose sight of the fact how much Pedersen has progressed as a young player.
I don't think we lose sight of it at all. He's developing like most, you know, when you look back at every young top player in the league, they've had growing pains their first 2-3 years. I remember when Crosby first came in the league, you could see right away how good he was and how dominating he was going to be. I'm sure he's the first to admit that, you know, he's a much better player today than he was his rookie season. And that, I think every young player in the NHL that had a long career as a top star in the league would say that there is a natural progression, and that's the case it is for any player in the league.
Decent bet to hit 50 points tonight, Quinn Hughes. Sitting on 49, first game of a 4-game road trip.
What is that, a point a minute? Oh, you mean on the season?
Oh, yeah. Didn't mean in this game. That'd be great, though. We can just do the whole on pace for thing. Yes, he could have his 50th point tonight. First Canucks defenseman to get there since Christian Eroff hit that number exactly, and that was his total for the season. With the greatest team this franchise has ever assembled, Quinn Hughes could hit that number tonight. He could pass that number tonight, and it would surprise none of us. This season is about so much more than the Calder Trophy. And you've made this point, and you were on this early, and if he starts getting some Norris run at some point here, not that he'll win it, but if he starts getting into that discussion, I will be the first to come back and say you were the guy who pointed it out primarily. I do want to say this. If he has a big game in Montreal, if he has a big game in Toronto on Saturday, as much as that shouldn't sway a lot of voters, it doesn't hurt.
No, for sure. And the last time they went through the East Coast is when, you know, this kind of started going, and people started to notice Jacob Markstrom, how fantastic he was. It was that, you know, San Jose, New York, Carolina trip, and obviously it tails off when they get to Boston. But, you know, they put people on notice going to New York, going to Carolina, and turning some eyes. And there was also the Buffalo trip, and not huge markets, obviously, but it helps when you're on the East Coast to have people take a look at it. Here's another chance now. Montreal, Toronto, it's...
Well, we saw it last year.
Yeah.
Elias Pettersson went to Ottawa and had the hat trick, and he was sensational. Yeah. And then he went to Montreal, and he got hurt, unfortunately, in that tie-up with Kokkonen. Never got to play in Toronto last season. I'm certainly not hoping that happens with Quinn Hughes. This is all of us knocking on wood here in studio.
But the reaction on Monday, that would be March 2nd. Now, they have a game between then, but the reaction on Monday nationwide might be different to Quinn Hughes than it is right now.
Yep. That's very fair. Scott Rento, Bick Nizar, you want in on this conversation, get in. Subway text line is 650-650. let's get back to this discussion about the Pacific Division, where the Canucks sit right now. And do you see it as Vegas's division and then everyone else? Do you see it as a multi-tiered race? How do you view these five teams in what I've called the Pac-5 for a while?
Yeah, the tier makes the most sense to me. I think it's Vegas in their own tier, right? And look, anything can happen. Vancouver gets hot, whatever. But to me, they've always been in their own tier, and they fell down to the rest of the group, but now they're back where they are. After that, it's a bit more muddied. However, in that second tier, I do think Vancouver's atop it. I get there's the supernova of Connor McDavid, but the rest of the roster really worries me. They just traded for their first line yesterday.
Will be the first line tonight. Maybe not the first line going forward. Great line by Dave Tippett today. Yeah. He's putting Tyler Ennis and Andreas Anthonisiou beside Connor McDavid. And when asked why, he said, housewarming gift. Massive.
Great line.
Great line from Dave Tippett down in Anaheim. It's interesting you say that because Edmonton, since the middle of December, has been the model of consistency. And Vancouver's been far more of a fluctuation in how it's played and the results that it's been able to generate.
Yeah, they've been a slower drip, right? They've been slowly getting their points, and Vancouver's gone on a long win. What was it, 14-17? And then here's a four-gamer, and then there's some losses in there. It's been...
Edmonton, I don't believe, has lost more than two games consecutively since mid-December.
But that also goes to the what's the team's peak, right? That's what I get concerned about. And that's what I spend most of my focus on of, okay, how can a team get towards their peak? To me, it's easier to see what Vancouver's peak is, and they've shown that they can achieve it. Edmonton's peak is, boy, I hope Connor shows up tonight, and he does most nights, and I hope he does something magical, and he does most nights.
Well, and there's the
but
other
to
guy.
Rely just on that.
The other guy who's 10 points ahead of everyone else in the league when it comes to scoring. But he's at 98 points. He can get to 100 tonight.
But there's such a reliance on those two guys that I fear less of the rest of the roster. And this still is a team game, as great as those two guys are. There's emphasis that is going to get focused onto them come playoff time. And it's about so much more than just those two guys in a seven-game series.
You and I have said for a long time, Vancouver's going to be a playoff team. They're getting in. If you could sign up for any of those other teams right now, and I won't put Vegas in that mix because that's obviously the team that you would never sign up for. But if you can sign up for Edmonton, Calgary, or Arizona in round one, which team would you sign up for?
Calgary or Edmonton, one of the Alberta teams. Probably Calgary, just because
it'd be a fun series.
It would be a blast. I think the order goes Calgary, Edmonton, Arizona. For you?
Yeah, Arizona is just one of those types of series, and with the way they play, because if Arizona gets in, that means that their defensive structure has all come back. They're getting great goaltending again. We know that math-wise, it's going to be difficult for the Coyotes. So if they get in, and they get into one of the top three spots, and that's who you're matched up with, I'm not sure you want to play them just because they're ugly games and they can go either way. And
yeah, like, did Calgary do enough to you yesterday?
No.
And so I'm curious.
Now, they have the one thing, which is they have the potential in their roster that what hasn't happened so far, if those guys get going, Calgary has the potential to be better. Their ceiling, as you like to put it, is probably better than the other two teams you mentioned.
Yes, but I'm just curious where their headspace is at. And the truth is, they probably don't even make it. But in a series, like I do still wonder about this team's mental toughness, that if something goes wrong in a series or in a game, how do they respond? And there was that moment when they played here, the Canucks should have put the throat, stepped on the throat, and they didn't, and it ends up being a much different game because it happens. It was 6-2 that game. It wasn't reflective of what the style of game it was. I felt like the Canucks were more in that game, but it was one of those moments where they were on the brink and they could have pushed them even further, and they just didn't have that winning spirit to knock Calgary over. I still look at them and say, that's a team I feel I can't hold up. Edmonton, obviously, because of the superpowers there, I probably put them a bit ahead of Calgary, and just because where they are in the standings, too.
Fair enough. This question comes in. At game 52 of the season, I predicted that going 500 the rest of the year will get us to the playoffs. Since then, they've been 4-4-2, 10 points out of a possible 20. With Markey out for a while and with what teams in our division did yesterday, is that prediction still plausible? Yes.
Oh, yeah, 500. And look, that's not the goal. That's not a standard. But that's just the reality of what they have to do here. If you go 500, and by all accounts, this team has shown that they can do exactly that.
Which would be 93 points.
Yeah. That gets you in. We kept saying, oh, the Western Conference playoff bar is going to improve this year. And it just didn't really. It just didn't get far enough.
Well, it's going to improve, most likely. 90 got Colorado in last year.
Was it 91 or 90?
I want to say 90. I could be wrong. Yeah, maybe okay. I'll look back and say it was 91. It hasn't improved a lot. It hasn't improved substantially.
But we were projecting like, oh, you got to get to 97, 98, somewhere around that stage. And it just didn't.
Would you guys be down to sing happy birthday to Brock on air in case he's listening? Nope.
No,
we wouldn't. Happy birthday, Brock Besser, but
that's not happening.
That's not actually happening.
You're right. It was 90. Sorry, that was 91. Okay, so it did improve by 2 wins.
All good. All good. Toronto yesterday. We didn't really get a chance to dig into this. Man, that's not what I thought I would see from the Leafs on trade deadline day, and that's certainly not what I thought I would hear from Kyle Dubas on trade deadline day.
Actions speak louder than words, right? And I know we made a strong statement, but for a team that came in with so much buzz, and they had expectations coming into the season, do not kid yourself. The actions of what they did yesterday also ring loud. This is we don't have what we thought we did.
No question.
And so
no question.
This
that's
is them
what is.
Already looking to the future. This is them, okay, if we get to the playoffs, we'll go to the playoffs.
We're not good enough.
Yes.
And there is too much to fix, and we don't have enough time right now to fix it.
Yeah.
So rather than spend capital on the fix now, we will do our renovation in the summer.
That is a massive declaration. And that's what's so fascinating. And this is why you have to take your chances when they come. And the Tyler Toffoli trade happens. This is why you go for it in these moments. This team has a belief right now. Toronto had that belief in the summer. They were pushing in for this year.
And that's not to say the Leafs aren't going to get into the playoffs. They could still get into the playoffs.
And
but
look, they'll be back next year as well, right?
Yep. What this feels like to me? Do you remember when St. Louis, a couple years ago, now, they didn't move Tyson Barrie?
Yes.
But when St. Louis said, you know what, Paul Stastny,
yes,
we're willing to trade you right now. We're not as good as we thought we were.
And the players,
they didn't like it.
Yeah, they tanked the rest of the way, basically. They weren't fans of it, and It kind of left a stain for what that season was. Very reminiscent of that.
But it was almost like, okay, we're not going to try to fix this right now because we can't. There's not enough we can do right now. This didn't work out the way we thought. So what we're going to see the rest of the way down the stretch is how many of you guys want to be part of this next year. Now, they're not going to make complete wholesale changes in Toronto, but could a big name go? Sure. Could they jettison some quote-unquote talent for some more will? Yeah, they could do that. They could they're going to alter the DNA of that team, or at least try to.
When you kind of go through that team, okay, they've made bets on certain players, right? Let's just quickly run through it. And you tell me if those bets have paid off. William Nylander.
Yes.
For sure, right? Kerfoot.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm a big fan of his game. Kapanen.
At times, but I wouldn't say consistently.
Okay. Zach Hyman, because they bet on him to play in a certain role.
Hyman's been decent.
Yeah, but not to what?
No.
Okay. Spezza.
Not really.
Jake Muzzin.
Yes.
Yes. Tyson Barrie.
Nope. Hasn't been what they thought. Doesn't mean he's a bad player.
No,
just has not been a good fit there.
Who else is there on this team? Cody Ceci, obviously a big no. But you start going through, and Andreas Johnson. Probably a no. You start going through this, like the bets that they made really have not panned out. There's a couple, obviously, William Nylander, and you bet on the high-end guys, and it can work out, but their depth bets have not really panned out. And over the course of time, that's what's slowly stripped them away. It's not been one big one. It's been death by a thousand cuts, and that's why they've survived to this point of the season, and they might go to the playoffs, but it's really the totality of the bets that's really taken a big toll.
And you go back to Mike Babcock, and I know there's a lot of stuff that went on, and it's not as though this was all going to work out if they kept him as coach, but one of the things he said early in this season that rings true with what they did or did not do yesterday, they thought this team had learned its lessons by losing in the playoff rounds last year, the year before. They thought they had learned lessons. They're still learning them. They're still learning them.
Well,
they are. They haven't learned.
They haven't applied the lessons. I think they've gone through the lesson. You're supposed to see what happens, and you're supposed to apply what happens. And that's why we talked a lot about in October and November, December, that this team was going through those 8-6 games with Pittsburgh. It's not fine to go through that, but when you go through that, okay, what's the positive note you can take from it? Hey, here's what happened. How do we apply it to the next time this goes down? And we just saw recently, this last Boston game, like when Boston pushed back a little bit and you could have folded, what did they do? No, they ramped it back up and they shut them out and it's 9-3. That's how you apply a lesson. Now, this is a very short sample size. We're talking year-to-year growth. That's why this season is important for Vancouver to go to the playoffs and learn a lesson. And how do you learn and apply it in the summer? How do you come back in October and say, hey, this is what happened. This is that new gear we have to go to.
Yeah, so maybe it's semantics. Maybe it's they know the price that has to be paid. They're not willing to do it, as opposed to they don't still understand how to get themselves into a mindset of what they need to do every night. And those are two slightly different things. But as far as the growth of that team and eventual evolution, if they're going to get there, it's important that they understand the difference. It really is.
Right.
Because if you have players who know what you need to do but aren't willing to do it,
that might
they
got to
go. Yeah, they got to go. Like, you have to get rid of those players. You can't have too many of those guys. The only guys you can have around like that, they can be players who are so uber talented and don't have a direct result on the culture of the team that you keep them around just because, I'm sorry, that guy's going to score 33 goals, so we have to have him. But he's not a culture carrier in the room, and he's not going to be the barometer by which we win or lose. You have too many of those guys around, they got to go. I'm not saying that's what the Leafs have, but that's what they have to determine. If it's guys who are like, yeah, I thought I knew, but for whatever reason, I can't get myself into the right mindset every night. Well, how coachable are they? Do they need just better people around them? Those are two different problems to have.
And we should mention, too, like, okay, there's pressure on them because it's Toronto and all of that. Like, Auston Matthews, 22. Mitch Marner's 22. Nylander, 23. There's time to do this, and we can't put too much short-term panic on what that team is, but it obviously failed and didn't work this year. But they'll be back next year. They'll be back the year after.
It is a reminder, though, that progression is anything but linear.
Yeah.
Three consecutive years in the first round of the playoffs, but no further. And you look at a team like Colorado, on the other hand, hey, the progression's been pretty linear into the playoffs, into the second round, game seven the next year. That's ideally what you're looking for, but it doesn't always happen. And we've seen it in so many different situations. You're co-hosting today with Randeep Janda. You're up next on Reach Deep.
Yeah, we'll take you to the pregame show as well. Get ready for Montreal.
NorlandLimited.com pregame show begins starting at 2:30. Bick Nazar will be a part of it. Randeep Janda as well. We're back here tomorrow morning. Scott Rintoul show, 9 a.m. Let's find out what happens tonight in Montreal, how it affects the rest of the Pac-5 race. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you then.